If you don't know, I'm Andrew Rome, serving as moderator for our Board of Trustees, and I'm so pleased this evening to be able to introduce Reverend Tom Shulak as part of the UUA's new targeted ministry program. Early last year, the UUA recognized a need for congregations who just don't fit into the usual categories of relationships with ministers, like settled ministers or interim ministers. We're right between those two right now, and we're still eagerly awaiting our next settled minister after an abbreviated interim period. So the board decided to hire Tom through the targeted ministry program for three goals: to provide an outside perspective, to assess the relational, communal aspects of our church in terms of the recent conflict, to provide ministerial consultation with our staff, worship, pastoral care, and lay leadership teams, and all the big picture that all the other goals fit into is to prepare our congregation for our next settled minister. So Tom is going to work with us for a few days each month over the next few months, and has spent the last busy couple of days meeting with church committees, staff, and individuals. He'll continue his work with a targeted ministry team of leaders from the congregation. And we continue that tonight with an opportunity for conversation, dialogue, to share our perspectives and to hear from Tom of what he's learned over the last days. If you've not had the pleasure of meeting Tom yet, who's wonderful, let me introduce him briefly. Tom worked as a UU minister from 1979 through 2007, if that's correct, both as a parish minister and a UUA district executive. He retired in 2014, and despite a busy life currently owning the local bookstore in New York, we're so lucky to have part of his time each month as he continues his calling to the ministry and shares with us some of his vast experience working with all kinds of congregations. So we have a lot to say. I'm not going to take up any more time. Thank you.
Well, first of all, let me just say that I'm really glad to be here, to be working with you and at this point in the life of your congregation. Let me just take a moment to just say that what I'm going to do is share a little bit of my observations. Having only been here for a couple of days, talking with a few folks outside of the congregation who know your congregation very well, reading through some of the documents that I could that have been developed here in the congregation in the last period of time. I'm going to share a little bit, and then there'll be an opportunity for you to share, not necessarily to respond to what I say, because I realize whatever I say here is so preliminary. I mean, how much can you really know about a congregation in a couple of days? But this is a part of a conversation that I expect that in one way or another will continue for the next several months whenever I'm here, so that we can expand our awareness and consciousness as it relates to where the congregation is right now. Some of the things that, in fact, will happen here often happens in the course of an interim ministry. And so what happened, because your interim ministry got a little mixed up and truncated, it means that we're doing some catching up. And so some of these things often would have happened, but because they didn't, in some small way, we're going to do what we can to connect to each other, connect to who you are as a congregation, and to help you get as ready as you can for the next settled minister who is hoped to be here in August, with the candidating being earlier than that. One other thing I want to just say is I actually officially retired as a full-time UU minister in 2014, but I've really not served any of our congregations for a little over 7 years. And during that time, my life has been open. But the truth of the matter is, in all honesty, the reason that I'm here is because of Donald Trump. When he got elected, I had to ask the question, what am I called to do now? And I felt that my calling was to take all these years of experience, serving four congregations, working with literally hundreds of Unitarian Universalist congregations, hundreds I worked with, over the basically 40 years that I've been involved in Unitarian Universalist ministry. And realizing that our congregations, for me, are communities of resistance. So I said to myself, if that's the case, and I know not everyone might agree with what I'm saying here, but I just need for you to know where I'm coming from. I wanted to do everything I could to work with our congregations within the parameters I have to be able to nurture and care for those communities so that the community and the individuals in the community could be as strong and as healthy as they could possibly be in order to be themselves, to nurture themselves, but when appropriate, also to say no when they needed to say no, individually and collectively. And so I need for you just kind of know that really without the election, I probably wouldn't be here. I've been recalled. I don't know, recalling is kind of an interesting thing, isn't it? But I have been recalled. And so I'm here, and I'm very grateful to the board to the UUA that makes this experience possible for me. What I'd like to do is just begin our time together by I had a chance to read your bylaws and a number of other things in the last couple of days, but I wanted to begin with your mission and your covenant statement and just read that as a way of grounding us in what it is that you have articulated is actually at the center of your congregational life. Our mission, you proclaim, is to inspire love, to seek justice, and to grow in community. To inspire love, to seek justice, and to grow in community. And you covenant together with the following. We affirm that each life has brilliance, and when joined with others in joyful community, has the power to transform. We pledge ourselves and our resources to this journey. This covenant inspires and challenges us to dwell together in right relationship. We promise to extend hospitality, nurture community for all ages, encourage spiritual growth, honor diversity, and practice kindness. With your mission and your covenant in the center of our gathering, let us begin our conversation. So, here's some of my thoughts. And they're very preliminary, so I hope you'll forgive me for missing many things or some really important things, but your voices will be part of our evening here so that you can add to the collective understanding of the congregation at this point in time. I've only begun to read your history. It's, you know, it's a long history. What's the year of the beginning? 1866. Think about that. Right after the Civil War. Can you imagine what this congregation was like right after the Civil War? And what was going on in this congregation? I can't, but it must have been something that called this congregation together after the worst time in American history, bar none. And the folks came together to form this congregation. So I think about that. And over the last 150, was it, are we 2 years now? 52 years or 51 years? As any congregation, I'm only beginning to understand some of the critical moments that has made this congregation what it is today. And those of you that have that have looked at this congregation and understand its story, its history, knows that this congregation has gone up, it's gone down, it's gone up, it's gone down, right? And there's been moments in which there's these critical moments that have made this congregation what it is today. I would say, based upon just a couple of days that I've been here, you are at another critical moment. Maybe not as big as the Civil War, I don't think so. Right? Maybe not even as big as in the early 1960s when the merger happened between the Unitarians and Universalists in this congregation, and a lot of people walked away because they were Universalist Christians and they did not want to be part of the new UUA. Or the time of the Vietnam War, when the congregation here went through a struggle that was mighty. And a lot of people left, didn't they? And then the congregation had to figure out, we're not at those points here, but we are at a critical moment, and therefore it's important for us, I think, to acknowledge that, because you're in between right now. A beloved minister who has left, a new one that's coming, and right in between comes a congregational conflict that involves the firing of an interim minister. The role of the interim minister is to help the congregation to grieve the minister who's left, find out who you are without that minister, and then get ready for the new minister. So what happens when in the middle of that, there comes this break? It means that some of the work that normally would happen has not been able to happen from my observation. It doesn't mean that good work hasn't happened. It doesn't mean that reflecting on what kind of minister we need has not happened and there hasn't been a lot of interaction. But some of the work is unfinished. So I think that in working with Andrew and the board, part of what it is that we're doing here is to see if we can. In fact, this is kind of how I imagine it in my mind. The search committee has clarity. It's moving like this, you know. And the congregation is kind of over here. And what we're trying to do is, in some ways, to catch up with the search committee. Because I think the search committee is actually a little bit ahead of the congregation in my observation right now. And what we want to do is work together to get ready. To get ready for the new minister, because what we want, and as we know in any relationship, when both sides of a relationship are ready, some amazing things happen, right? And if there's not a readiness on one side or the other, things get a little messed up. It often gets messy until you can try to figure it out, and we don't want that to happen here. So, you're in a significant transition time. And here we are. I also know from my experience, not only as in my individual life, but in working with congregations, that when conflict comes to congregations, these are critical moments in the life of a congregation. And I learned a long time ago that if you stay with conflict, it reveals often beauty and power and authenticity that comes when you stay with it and you work with it. Authentic community and authentic selfhood comes out of conflict. It does not come out of smooth places. That in fact, joy does come out of suffering. And I'm not saying there's an inordinate amount of suffering, but clearly the congregation has experienced conflict. And in the 2 days that I've been with you, I have listened, and in fact, I have heard some of the pain, some of the tears, some of the struggle that has come out of this last period of time. And we want to be able to acknowledge that and work with it appropriately, either one-to-one with me in the future, maybe two-to-two, three-to-three, maybe in groups, maybe in other kinds of ways, as well as in larger gatherings like tonight. In conflict, we get hurt. Often we feel misunderstood. We can become disappointed, and our heart can get broken. And when any of those situations comes about, what is it that we as human beings really want more than anything else? Well, what we yearn for, given that we're inspired by love, we want love to come in and help us to heal it. Either a larger love or a love from another person or a love that comes in whatever way love comes to you. It doesn't come in just one way. And we want that healing to happen wherever it can. And I would say that that's part of what we're wanting to do together in this next stretch of time. So that the first goal that the board asked of me to work with is really the aftermath of the conflict. And I think that even I can say in some small little ways, as a result of listening and being with you, I'm hoping that a small amount of healing and maybe a little bit of reconciliation happens, but the primary work is work that you will do with one another when I'm not here. And I always love the Reinhold Niebuhr reading, which I don't know if it's in our hymn book. I can't quite remember where it is, but he said, "The final act of love is forgiveness. It is the act of love that is probably the most important one, because it allows us to come back together after we have broken something or we've broken a relationship." And so I want to work with, in any way I can, with the healing and the reconciliation. Without a minister in a congregation that is complex and as amazing as you all are, this is an amazing congregation, what you all are able to do collectively, you know, is a real tribute to you and to, I think, to your past ministers. That you've worked on and shared ministry together. But I'm wanting to work with the board. The board has been through a really hard time. This is not anyone that's been on the board in the midst of a congregational conflict. Oh my gosh. You just want to hug them all. I mean, really, you just want to hug them all, because it's one of the hardest things, because it's, you know, you're not prepared for it. You don't know how to handle this stuff. Our congregations are complex. If we were all hierarchical and authoritarian, it'd be a lot easier, wouldn't it? But we're not. So we get into all of our stuff and all of our mess. And it requires us to be courageous, to not let our hurt define our response. It takes courage to love. It takes courage to reach out to somebody that's hurt you. It takes courage to go beyond the things that cause us to withdraw. It's just the way we are as humans. I know sometimes I get hurt and I just start coiling up, you know, and I say, oh my gosh, I don't want to see that person. I don't even want to be in the same room. It hurts too much. But part of what love requires is the reconnecting. I remember Paul Tillich saying that love is the reunion of the separated. I love that. Love is the reunion of the separated. That's a lot what I'm feeling that we need to be about together, is to reunite the separated where it exists. There's a lot of connection here, but there are some separations that we need to work on together. So working with the board, working with the ministerial executive team, working with the staff, working with the caring committee and the worship committee and the membership committee and other teams that would want the caring team to be able to connect with them. In whatever way we can keep those parts of the whole, the search committee, those parts of the whole working so that they can accomplish what it is that they need to, while at the same time being aware if there's any broken relationships, that we try to work on those. And so we're gonna spend time together trying to nurture those entities in the congregation while at the same time connecting parts of the whole that might be somewhat separated, but it's for the purpose of love. That's what it's about. And what we want to do is get ready for the new minister. So a few observations in addition to some of the things that I've already said in terms of the overall. So here's what I see. The congregation, the UU congregation here in Kent, is a very strong congregation. And it's filled with an unbelievable number of people, you and others, who are deeply committed to this congregation and to its mission and to its covenant. And I've experienced that already. You have strong lay leadership here. It would be impossible for you to do all the things that you do, which is pretty boggling when you think about it, without a lot of people who are willing to step up and lead, including the staff as well as the lay leaders. And there is a tradition of shared ministry here that is very, very strong, and which you yearn for in terms of being in that kind of relationship. There is strength in worship and music. The vision of the new building is still one that captures the imagination and the hopes of the congregation. And when the shovel or whatever it is that goes down, wherever it's going to go down, happens, there's going to be a tremendous sigh of relief. Right? This has been a long time. I mean, really. I mean, you know, come on. I mean, it's been a long time. But it's going to happen. And when that happens, I think that almost like the earth, as you dig into the earth, there's going to be energy that's going to come up from that new building. Even though I'm aware that there's a concern about being able to finance all that the congregation has committed to, you are a very generous people. You're very generous. You're generous with your time, you're generous with your talent, and you're generous with your treasure collectively. And I know there's a wide variety of economic levels in the congregation. Everybody's a treasure. Everybody has something to give here. And a lot of people are giving a lot to make this community what it is. So let me just ask you and stop right there. What of the things that... I know I've missed. I'm just thinking about the way in which you care for one another. And you it's amazing how you connect the creativity of the worship arts and the way in which those are created. What have I missed that you really celebrate about yourselves as a congregation? What have I missed here? Yes. What's that?
Every year we hold an amazing auction of the much larger churches wish that they would do something.
Yes. Absolutely. And I guess you just had it last month and it was quite an event. So the auction, other things you want to celebrate? Yeah.
I want to say that it's a wonderful ministry to the children in this church. They're very much loved, taken care of.
So the ministry to the children. Other.
Hogwarts.
Yes, which has been here for a while now, right? And that's an integral way of caring for, is it all ages of kids? Or?
Actually, a lot of the kids have come up through and gone on to be professors.
Yeah.
And so we've had little kids come up through Hogwarts and go on to be.
So we celebrate the Hogwarts.
Community, our sense of caring about staying in community.
Right. I think that you wouldn't be here and others wouldn't really care if there wasn't that sense of community. Yes. The breadth and depth of the music program, definitely. Yes. Any other?
I might say the depth of social justice.
Yes. I did recently a sermon at one of the congregations in our area, and I used that call and response that I was down at the Women's March in Washington. And the one I love the most is, tell me what democracy looks like. This is what democracy looks like. And I did this with a congregation, and I asked the people to just call out all the ways that they're involved in promoting and nurturing democracy, and include in addition to just being part of the congregation, which is democratic, and learning about democracy, because we are a workshop in democracy. And I couldn't believe all the things that our folks were doing on behalf of the larger well-being of democracy. It's pretty inspiring, as well as the things we collectively do together in the community. So other, yes.
There's a certain glue here in the congregation. We're all the same sort of familial spirit.
Yeah.
My wife, I travel with my wife, and she speaks at other congregations in Northeast Ohio. I don't fully see it the same way in other places. There's one church in Pittsburgh that I think has it like we do, but
yeah.
It's palpable, but I can't explain very well. It's just a tight-knit family.
Do you have any clues as to what are the ingredients that goes into that glue? Do you have some hunches?
It's the individuality of everybody. There's so many people that just want to, they can fit in and take part.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't know.
Yeah, right, right. So it's the glue.
I know a reason.
Yeah.
It's a thing here that when you start to come in the spring, people will say, well, are you going to summer institute?
So some, yes, and this congregation really sends a lot of people to summer institute, doesn't it? And there is no substitute for that kind of experience. Yeah. That's part of the glue. Yes.
Like-mindedness. Back in grad school.
Right.
We practice what we preach, basically.
Right.
Diversity, welcoming, everything else. There's no hidden agenda.
Right. So some common values, some common ground. Yes.
We're a really tight group. We care about each other, but we also are very aware that we can't be tight and exclusive. One of the things that I hear in many of Powell's songs is the idea of the open circle.
Yeah.
And I think that really permeates who we think of ourselves.
As an open circle. Yeah. Yeah. Andrew, you want to?
The way I see the glue that holds us together, I think we consistently see the best in each other.
Yeah.
And that's how we perceive each other. Yeah. And that it's so powerful to be seen together.
Yeah, thank you. Yes.
I think we look at ourselves as a family.
families are not cooking.
Yeah, don't we know that, right? How many of us are in families, right? You're right. There's a messiness in families, aren't there? And it's not always easy, right? And here we are. Yeah.
I was going to mention our owl program, too.
Owl?
We have a really good ongoing owl program.
Mm. Okay. Yes, thank you. Yeah.
I feel like there's support for growth. You know, I don't hear people say, oh, we should do it that way because we always have.
Yeah.
I feel like there's just a feeling of, like, yes, it's good to grow and to learn more, but there's a culture around that and the support.
You mean grow as a congregation, but also grow individually?
Both,
yeah. Yeah.
I would say, although I hear you saying that we've got some readiness things to do for a new minister, I think one of the things I see happening, and I'm certainly experiencing it, out of this work, extremely hard work that people are putting together, wonderful services, week after week after week, from layman ministry for the most part, is that we are really getting used to a wide variety of people giving services.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good thing. Keep our minds open.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's coming right from the people, isn't it? Of the congregation. Anyone else? Okay. Thank you. So, here are some of the concerns that I picked up that came from, I don't know how many people that I met with, but let me just kind of give you an idea of some of the groups. I met with the staff and I met with the board, and we have a new targeted ministry team, and met with the caring committee, met with the worship arts committee, met with the stewardship committee. Well, who else did I meet with? I met with the search committee.
MET.
The MET committee. Just the chair of the membership. I didn't meet with the whole committee, but we're gonna put that on the agenda for next month when I come back. Somehow we missed one another, but we at least got a chance to talk with the chair. So here are some of the things that came out of that. That the feelings about the firing of the interim minister are still very alive in a good number of people. Not everybody, but a good number of people. Some people feeling that the process could have been different, which is very understandable. There's no such thing as the perfect process. Some people who wish that Reverend Anya would still be here because they really resonated with her. Others who felt that, in fact, it was time to go for her to leave, but yet they feel that there's tension between themselves and other people in the congregation who might have had different opinions about process or about whether to have her or not. So there's differences in the congregation from what I've experienced, and I only had a small sampling, but I experienced it there. For some people in the congregation, even though Melissa left 14 months ago, there still is significant feelings about her leaving. Some people are really disappointed still. Some people are actually a little mad that she left when she did and how she left. And there are some that are grieving and are just sad. They're happy for her, but they're sad that she's gone. There are feelings that are still residing, pretty understandable, because she was with you for, I think, was 12 years, am I right? Something like 11, 12 years, about. Feelings about Melissa. And I already said this, and when you juxtapose her leaving with Trump being elected, for some of you, this combination, I don't even know what the right words are. What's the word? Help me out with some words here. Demoralizing. What else? What?
Double whammy.
Yeah. They came in the same month. And for some, you know, and I know in our congregations, Not everybody. There's a real spectrum of politics in our congregation. There really is, and I want to really be sensitive to that. But this is not about the fact that Donald Trump is a Republican for me. This is not. I've never spoken about this in all my ministry around politics. This is not about that for me. It's something having to do at a much deeper level with integrity and democracy. And so I want to be clear, because I don't know your politics, you know, but I want to be clear that I'm not trying to get into Republican and Democrat or Independent or Green Party or whatever. So these two things coming together was not insignificant in terms of the loss for a number of people in the congregation. The delay in being able to break ground on the building lives. If that ground could be broken, it would be like a spring of water coming up, you know? I don't know if you'd hit a water pipe or whatever, but fresh water would come up here. It's been hard and long, and people have said, boy, we've worked so hard on this. Wouldn't that liberate us if we just got that building going? Communications without a minister, or maybe communications with a minister, I don't know. Well, it depends on your situation. But Melissa was an excellent communicator, and my image is of her knowing not only most everybody in the congregation quite well, but knowing what's going on. When you lose that center of a hub of communication, it means that certain things don't get communicated, right? Or, I'll get to that in just a second. I'm going to stay with this one. Therefore, in order for communications to stay anywhere close to where it means that the congregation needs to think in new ways about communication in the absence of the minister for the next 6 months. Don't know exactly what kind of way, but it's got to go up. It's got to go up. Too many people are not knowing about other things or feeling like, I haven't heard anything about that. I don't know what's going on there. And I know that happens in every congregation. And I know that you have written ways, but I think there may be other ways in which communication needs to happen. And I heard that a number of times. I don't feel like I know what's going on there. I haven't heard from that group in a long time. That happens in every congregation, but I think it's heightened without the hub of the wheel here right now. There is the reality that in order for you as a congregation to do what you're envisioning to do in the future around minister and building, that it is going to require increases in pledges. And there's an anxiety around that. It's real. And I'm going to be working with the stewardship committee to see if we can't work together to try to figure out how it is that the vision that you have for yourself, particularly around these two areas, because it's not only the building of the building, it's the cost of maintaining the building, which has to be built into the budget, right? We've got that, plus you are a generous congregation and you are offering a ministerial package that is generous. You're right in there, right? So we're going to need to work on that the next couple of months. You're going to do the primary work, but I'm going to work with you because I recognize that this is very, very important to the congregation. The other thing which I learned, and this is, I don't know if this is, I guess this would be a concern, but it's more of an observation, is that this is a very complex system that has been used to Melissa's leadership style, which is amazingly capable, very present, very connected, very responsible, very accountable, and in which she is right in there. For the last, since 2010, the congregation has not grown in numbers. And I don't know whether you really want to grow in numbers. I don't really know, because I didn't see that, and I haven't picked that up as something that you collectively really want to do. But the truth of the matter is that, and I've talked with the search committee about that, this is that the leadership style of the minister at this given point in time, one of the questions that I would really encourage you to explore, don't know how you're going to do it, is, do you want the same style of ministry that Melissa had? And if you do, then you're going to go try to find that kind of style, which I would call sophisticated pastoral style. Highly sophisticated. And she probably would have been able to develop into what I would call a different style, which is more hands-off, but yet still being aware, connected, not knowing everybody, not working with every group, empowering the leaders. You then become the leader to the leaders. You don't become the leader to everybody in the congregation. That's how congregations grow, right? Is they grow as a result of actually the whole system opening up. And probably the maximum amount that a minister of the style that Melissa and you created here is about the size you are right now, in all honesty. And you've done really well. And you actually are a program congregation organizationally, but you have to ask the question, and the search committee has to ask the question with you, do we really want to grow? Do we want another style? Because if you get another style, what's going to happen? Some people in this congregation are going to say, the minister doesn't care about me because they don't know me personally, and they don't spend time with me because we've attracted additional people. And with your new building, you have an opportunity to grow. And I would say that probably the best way to deal with stewardship is to grow the congregation, as well as to deal with the issues of giving, which I think you've done really well together. I see this as something that, I don't know to what extent you've talked about this, but I do think it'll be important to be self-aware so that there aren't expectations that don't get fulfilled here, because either on the part of the minister or on the part of the congregation as to what bringing a new minister will mean. The next area is people being heard. When you've gone through what this congregation has gone through, it's clear to me that some people don't feel that they've been heard. Some people feel like that there's not the place for, they want to be heard, but they don't feel like there's the place for them to be heard or the opportunity to be heard in terms of what's going on inside of them. So my coming, I would be happy to meet with anyone individually and to listen, but there's more than that that will need to happen around people feeling heard. Not only heard so that their voice can come out about how they feel inside, but they may be able to hear to what other people's experience might be. And to reconcile where possible. And we know that just like forgiveness is hard, reconciliation is hard, particularly where there's been some break in trust. When you feel like you're backing away from somebody, when you see them on the other side of the room, take the risk and go over and say, you know, I don't know why it is, but I feel like I'm backing away from you. You can feel it. We know when people start backing away from us. But try to see wherever possible, do the opposite. Do the opposite. Or if there's an opportunity to talk with some people who might be in a small group about the congregation, take the opportunity to say yes. You will learn not only a lot about yourself, but probably about others as well. There needs opportunity for people to be heard, including tonight. I think that there is a certain tension between the board and some of the other leaders of the congregation. And what I would like to say around that is we have opportunities to be able to find a way to connect that larger leadership group, because we have some stuff going on here, and we need to deal with it. And I'll be working with the targeted ministry team to see if there's some ways that we can bring the leadership together so that some conversations can happen. What's this word? Forget about it. I can't read my own writing here. In some ways, I'm a very small, unintentional, tiny little interim process with you, right? And we can do some wonderful things together, whether I'm with you or not. But I think I see that as we've got some things that we need to do together. So I would like to then offer, are there some concerns that you're aware of in the congregation that I've really just missed, you know, some things that I've missed? But, yeah.
One I would say is significant to me, and I've heard it significant to some other folks too, is that at the before this interim period started, there was some matchmaking done between the UUA and us. And that was not totally appropriately done, from what I've heard. And the way I'm hearing you talking sounds like it's all an internal conflict. But I think I see it being a little bit like a marriage that goes awry. That there's this person that I ended up divorcing looks fine in public life.
Yeah.
And everyone's quiet saying, why are you divorcing them? If they're not seeing what's happening behind the doors, that's abusive. And I'm not going to speak about anyone else's experiences,
right.
but I experienced face-to-face abusive behavior
right.
that is not appropriate for a minister. We have suffered because of that.
Yeah. Thank you. No, but I yeah, yes. Thank you for lifting that up. Other thoughts, concerns? Yeah.
Can I ask a question?
Sure. What? Yeah.
Going back to the issue about feeling, some people feel like they've been hurt. Does that include people who are experiencing just personal emotional pain and are not getting the pastoral help?
Yeah. Yeah. So, Chris. Okay. Yeah.
Are you able to repeat that question?
Well, no. I want to. Come on, you come on up. Here, let me just. Yeah, I want you to come up and say it so everyone can hear.
I was questioning more detail about the statement about some people feeling that they hadn't been heard, and I was wondering if these were individuals who have personal hurts that have nothing to do with the church that are feeling that they're not getting adequate pastoral care from the church.
I didn't hear any of that. I didn't hear that. It really had to do with their experience of the dynamics within the congregation is what people came to me for the most part. Not completely, but for the most part. Yeah, for the most part, not completely. Other thoughts, other yes.
I just have a simple thought and a reminder that all of this leadership, we're all volunteers Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I'm just an emotional person, so ignore that part. But
it's okay.
Everybody knows that about me. Melissa used to go, "Hi, Jay." But we're volunteers. Yeah. We're doing our best.
Sure.
I've heard some criticism of the board. Well, my goodness, they had a tremendous load to bear that most of us know nothing about, or so little that we couldn't possibly have done any better than anybody else. But we need to remember that we're volunteers.
Right.
We're doing our best.
Yeah.
We're going to use this opportunity with you, and we're learning again to share more.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's going to be a great time for us to do just that.
Yes.
To be more honest, to be more clear, more willing to bring forward those things that maybe that volunteer needs to know to help them do the job they're trying to do.
Yeah.
Enough about that, but we're volunteers.
Yeah. Thank you. Beautifully said. Other thoughts or sharings?
Okay. And it's just really clarification. I'm kind of following up on what Christy asked, trying to understand about people who think they have not been heard. Does it seem to be about the Reverend Anya situation that they felt their opinions weren't heard, or was it something more general about the way the dynamics of the church and friendships and that they may feel on the outside?
The energy is mostly almost exclusively around the conflict with Reverend Anya. Almost exclusively for me in the 2 days that I've been here.
And I didn't know the conflict was as deep or as broad as it sounds like it might be. I'm just not aware of that.
Yeah.
So that's new news for me.
Yeah. Hal in the back.
Well, I'm not on the board or in any leadership position like that, but my own perception of what happened is that it was very difficult for there to be a lot of communication around that conflict with Reverend Anya because it was a personnel matter. And so there was this need that people felt to not talk about it inappropriately. The board members couldn't talk about it. You know, they were really, you know, they had to do the right thing as board members. And a lot of people just didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
And it took a while for people to actually talk with each other, to share experiences, because it seemed somehow inappropriate, or that people didn't know whether the experiences they were having were shared with other people.
Right.
And so that may seem to outsiders like that was gossip or something, but it really wasn't. It was people trying to figure out what was going on.
Yes.
In an environment that was very difficult, because this was somebody we had hired, and there were all these kind of restrictions. You couldn't have fully open discussion of it.
Yeah.
And so people who didn't know what was going on because they weren't in leadership positions were shocked.
Yeah.
And they felt like, well, I didn't get to say anything about this. I didn't know anything about it. But those were the reasons. It wasn't that anybody was intentionally sneaking around.
Absolutely.
So I just thought that was important to note the difficulties there.
Thank you. Thank you. Other thoughts?
Yeah. I want to hitchhike on that just a little bit. I'm a relatively newcomer to this congregation. I've been a member for a little over 2 years. And one of the things I really valued as a norm in this community is we don't badmouth each other.
Hmm.
Now, given the experiences that many people had, including myself, I didn't know where to go with my concerns, with my hurts, and didn't feel free to start conversations with people about that for a very long time because it was a norm. And I think that some of the feelings of people saying, why didn't people speak up? Why don't I know about this? Why didn't I know people were hurting? Is not necessarily a reflection of something bad, but of a norm of we don't badmouth each other.
Right.
And I will say for myself, that's why in part it was so shocking to hear it from a minister.
I did the last part. Hear what? Help me to understand. I didn't understand.
Is this one? Hear bad mouthing of community members by the minister.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Yeah. No.
I mean, I didn't hear that from people in the community before.
Right. Right. Other thoughts? Yes.
I was late to have an experience that made me think there was something wrong. For months, I was quite charmed by this interim minister who read poetry, had a lot of interest in literature, which I share, seemed warm and gentle, and lots of positive things that really appealed to me. And when I had my in a meeting experience and experienced hearing just malicious damning of volunteers who I knew and had known for years, but still at the moment that it was happening, I thought, I questioned my own reality. And so afterwards, and I didn't stand up for these people, and I feel badly about that. But then later I went and one-on-one spoke to them and said, is it true that you've been doing this and doing that and doing the other? No, and it was a complete reverse. It was a complete reverse. People were being accused of doing what the interim minister was doing. And it was crazy-making, totally crazy-making. And when I heard that Sandy Eaglin, the treasurer, had resigned, and I spoke with her and heard her multiple experiences, and from being in the annex so much, she had overheard staff being mistreated, that I thought, we've got to do something. This is just terrible. Mm-hmm. And I would just put out an appeal to those people who didn't ever have that unpleasant wake up, who just experienced having someone who was a lovely minister and then suddenly they're fired, is maybe you can trust us a bit, those of us that did get hurt. And trust, because I think towards the end of June, something like 26 key volunteers spoke with Renee off campus about their experiences. Mm-hmm. That were not trivial.
Yeah.
And that we felt like how we wanted to keep things going.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we were in a crazily unusual situation. I hope we never, ever get anything like this again to go through. But I would appeal for some trust of those of us that experienced rough things that we're not lying.
Right.
And that we can't have a minister sabotaging the core of volunteers that are keeping it going.
Right.
And when I saw that members were attending other churches and pledges were down, I thought, we're a leaking ship.
Let me just offer one additional, which I think that's really important around trust. And I would hope also that those people who did not have a good experience with Reverend Anya would understand those that had a really good experience. And that for whom even to this day, the loss of her ministry here is deeply painful for them. The trust can go, and to trust that there's some that had a really bad experience, but there are also some who had a very profound personal experience, and that it can go both ways, But I think what you're saying is very important. Very important. Yeah.
Tom, I wanted to ask a question and kind of precede that by kind of making some observations. I think you're absolutely right about that this church needs to start with this building. I think there's been an awful lot of energy. I think there's been an awful lot of disappointment coming from the demands of the zoning laws. We have to do this and we have to do that. And the building has grown in expense to an incredible amount at this point. But my question goes back to what you were saying about the churches that have grown and your statement that it really didn't grow that much under Melissa.
No, it did.
Oh, I thought you said it
no,
did
from
not.
2010. It's been flat since 2010.
It's been flat. Okay. Yeah. And then you mentioned actually, how it, grew quite it seemed a lot, like actually. You were saying that the kind of minister who is involved with growth is not so much like Melissa in that she has her finger on everything, but is a leader of leaders.
Yes.
I think. And my question, I guess, is has the UUA done, is there any data or research or any kind of knowledge? Have there been churches that have grown that way? Because I kind of see, I mean, the churches that seem to really take off seem to me to be the ones that are really theologically heavy, and the people are coming there more for theology than for relationships. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering if the way Unitarianism is structured, mm-hmm. if that is that really been shown to work? And mm-hmm. I guess I have a hard time myself seeing that kind of structure pulling in the kind of people who would stay Unitarians.
Mm-hmm. The real difference between it is not that it isn't relational. It just means that the role of the minister is quite different. The minister is there to primarily nurture the leaders of the congregation. That's their primary role. And the congregation understands that they may not have the same access to the minister that they had before. It's still highly relational. It's not authoritarian. It's not theologically narrow. And we have a number of congregations. For the congregations that grow to 300 or to 400, it's because of a style of interaction between the congregation and the minister that allows for that kind of growth where if you think of the biological, where the cells begin to multiply in ways, but it isn't all revolving around the center knowing where everything is going on. It's a little bit different way of responding. And I don't want to get into a huge conversation on that. I think that's just an observation that if you want to explore that some more, because otherwise the likelihood is, unless you're self-conscious, is that you will end up finding somebody probably like you had before. So it's just an exploration, and I don't. Maybe we can deal with this more when I come back next time. If the board and the targeted ministry says let's explore this some more, we could get into some wonderful conversations about it. But there are congregations in the area here for whom that way of being congregation, Unitarian Universalist. You know, I happen to be with one in Albany that's 350 members. There's no way the minister can operate like you can in 150 to 200. Yeah. And this is not negative about Melissa at all. This is not about at all a negative feeling about her unbelievable leadership.
So this is probably the crier's row back here. That's why we sat in the back.
Okay.
I never thought I would actually verbalize this, but it is, most everyone in this room knows that I had a very close relationship with our former minister. And as much as I love her and her ministry and her style, The one thing I would like to express to the Ministerial Search Committee that has probably already crossed your minds is she did too much for us. And some of that is what we're grieving and mourning. She did too much, and we let her. And that's okay, because that was the relationship we had. But with what Tom is saying is a realization I came to a number of months ago, is that none of us is perfect. Melissa was not perfect. I am not. You are not. She was not a perfect minister. Damn close. But she wasn't. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things I think we have to be very, very careful about, is we let her be our leader. We let her be maternal. We allowed her to do as she did. And that was part of some of what we loved about her, was that kind of, just that whole personality.
Yeah.
And so many things about her. But I think we need to acknowledge that. We need to own that. And we probably need to let a new minister be a new minister, not a mini Melissa.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where the insight came from. I wouldn't have known it otherwise. I also had a wonderful conversation with Melissa yesterday. Let's just be honest. I needed to talk to her, because I knew how much she loves this congregation and wants the best for the congregation and wanted to offer all of her insights. that's where I'm getting some of this from. Okay. Yeah, Kathy.
Just a comment. Represent the search committee. You know, of course, we all loved Melissa, and we love her to this day. And but we are not the congregation we were when Melissa came.
Right.
She was, you know, Saul and I say we were just lucky. We were on that search committee. Like, made us look good, but you know, thank you, Melissa. But we're not looking for a Melissa. And why do we know that? Because we studied the congregation from your voices. You told us what you wanted. And we know that we're moving into being a program church. Melissa was letting go. She started pulling away. I mean, when she first came here, there would have been no way that she would have let two members and our administrator write the bylaws by ourselves.
Right. There was a sign.
Right. But, I mean, we got some input from her, but basically she trusted us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Kathy.
Yeah. And she pulled away. I talked to Claudia Miller, who's doing, you know, lots of things. She said, you know, I want to do this for Melissa. She needs relief. So I will be the volunteer coordinator, and I'll do membership, and I'll be on the leadership development team, you know.
Right.
But she started doing some of the things and giving Melissa, you know, you can back off some, Melissa.
Right.
You know, so, and pastoral care, I think there was some movement that way.
Yep.
Because we had many months without Melissa during her ministry.
Right, right.
And people stepped up, and we found our strength. Uh-oh. The crying spreading.
Here we go. Who's got the Kleenex?
We keep them in our pews here, we know.
This is a sorry outfit, I'll tell you.
But, yeah, you know, and the, just I want to say thank you to the congregation, because the search committee has felt trust from you.
Mm-hmm.
And you have shared so much to us, so we can be informed, and we're right in the middle of reading ministerial records and ministerial packets, and I'll just let you know, I've been so reassured. Mm. It's such, you know, I think I've listened or read 25 sermons this week, which has been, you know, marvelous. The spirituality should just be rolling off me. There are some great people out there with wonderful voices. And, you know, that can take us in some ways that we want to go, but we haven't quite gotten there yet. And so, you know, just keep that trust coming, and we're going to work hard.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think we'll, well, I know, I feel assured we will be okay. We will.
Thank you for that reassurance, Kathy. Thank you. Yes.
She was leaving, and when she left, I wanted to get another Melissa here. But one of the best things about Melissa was her authenticity. Do we want a fake Melissa? That's just impossible.
No, there you go. I love it. We don't want a fake Melissa. That's a great line. That's a great line. Anyone else? Any other? Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to say my piece. I am one of the people I feel has not been heard for a long time, in spite of the fact that I am on the board. And I'm not sure that everybody who's here today knows the exact sequence of events, so maybe to tell my story, it would help to start from where I see it. When we began to know on the board that there were problems in the congregation with the Reverend Anya, was at a board meeting when there was a loud discussion between Anya and a couple of church members. And from there, we didn't get a moderator at that meeting, and we didn't have another board meeting, but there was a separate meeting held with leadership in the congregation. Specific people were invited to come to the meeting. Anya was not included, and I was not able to attend that meeting, but I read the document that was generated from that meeting, which was just meant to be a list of concerns that people had generated at the meeting. So I came at that as an outsider, in the sense that I wasn't at the meeting, so I wasn't a part of it. And when I read the document, I was horrified. I was beyond horrified. I truly couldn't believe what I was seeing, and I especially couldn't believe what I was seeing in the context of the fact that the Reverend Anya had not even been informed that people were going to talk about the ministry as it existed at that point. I was just horrified at the travesty of justice being done in this situation. So unfair. I just couldn't find a way
Can you keep it into first person? It will be helpful if you can get the I.
Talk about myself?
Yeah, talk about I. Rather than
is what I was feeling. I mean, I'm
just encouraging you to keep with the I. Keep with
I
the
felt.
I. Oh, yeah, right. Thank
yep.
You.
I felt it was so unfair.
Yeah.
I couldn't find a way from that point forward to find a fair way to make the process work, to be able to come to a place where the termination would take place in a clear, honest, cooperative fashion. It really needed to be cooperative. The Reverend Anya had to know that these were the problems, and this is where the situation was problematic, and this is where the situation was problematic. And then I could say, okay, obviously, Anya is not working with us in this situation, and it's time to let it go. And I feel like people have interpreted my actions and words around this termination as being a negation of other people's experiences in the church, which is absolutely not. I absolutely, in no circumstances, would say, well, I don't believe that happened to you, and of course Anya's right, or something like that. I mean, I wouldn't say that. I don't think that. I just think that as a church community, we need to follow what we say we are when we read our covenant and when we read our mission. And we're going to treat the people that we invite into this environment in a way that is fair and allows everybody to have their voice. So, I mean, I don't know how to say that.
Thank you. Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. But I'm just wondering, so in some ways, you would have hoped that the process would have been different and that the patterns, the things that moved along would have been different than they were.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Right from the beginning.
Right from the beginning. Thank you. Yep. Thank you.
Just talk into this? Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know how to hear. I think I'm in a very unusual situation here. I would venture to say, I'm pretty sure I'm the oldest and longest term member of this congregation. And I've been years ago on committees, very active, social justice, so on and so on and so on and so on. As I have continued to lose mobility, I have not been able to be as active. And I apologize to many of you who I've heard have had horrendous experiences that I have no connection with. I can't understand it. Because my experience of Anya is sitting in this very seat that I'm sitting in, and she comes in and does a service with poetry, with quoting people that I had read, and I thought, oh my goodness, a minister knows about this person, so on and so on. And I'm not connected personally with very many of you, so that we don't share personal kinds of things, and all of a sudden there's this uproar about this horrible, horrible person who, for me, I think, picked up when she came, there was a lessening of the pain of losing Melissa, because I really couldn't. I was so happy for Melissa getting such a good job and having her children taken care of, and I loved her so much that I had to be happy that she was leaving us. It was time. She needed to leave us to have her life and to have a better life. We couldn't hold her back. So for me, Anya, with her poetry, and she was very kind to me, she helped buffer the distance. And with Melissa, that Melissa was gone, and I think it's really just recently, now with Anya gone, now I'm really grieving Melissa. Because before I only looked at it as, yeah, that's bad for us and that's really tough, but Melissa needs to leave us. She needs a new life, and I was very happy for her. So now, in the situation we're in now, I feel terrible for so many of you that had to go through these horrifying experiences. Absolutely terrible. And I feel so totally disconnected. I sit here every Sunday. I never miss a Sunday in this seat. So totally disconnected from everything that's been going on. But Anya's presence, which I experienced in the things that were going on here as very genuine, gave me a kind of courage and a kind of strength to be able to handle losing Melissa. Now it's just nowhere.
Thank you, Mary. Yeah, either way. Why don't we do a couple of more reflections or comments?
I may be coming at this from a slightly different perspective. I know there are a number of people that really miss Reverend Anya, and I know other people that are so glad she's gone because of the abusive treatment. I actually enjoyed Reverend Anya. We had wonderful discussions. She's a master luthier, guitar builder. So we had that connection. So we had wonderful conversations, and I never had a sense of the abusive nature of her. But once I heard two stories from two different people, so I have a history of abuse in my past, and so I've actually studied it quite a bit to figure out how I got in, and, you know, all that. So once I heard two stories from two different people, I realized what was going on right away, even though it wasn't happening to me at all. And I knew that, and abusers don't change either. So I knew we, some kind of way, we just couldn't keep her hair.
Mm. Thank you. Share something. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I guess it would be easy for me to talk about my own experience of Anya, but I'm more interested in my experience of our church and our congregation. And what I notice, just for instance, in the worship arts team, Melissa created this amazing system and this amazing team and this amazing way of doing worship. And Anya came in and didn't know anything about that and had a different way. And her way was maybe to you know, write a sermon on Saturday and come inspired and preach it on Sunday, which we kind of joked about sometimes, and it really bugged me. But, you know, what happens when someone else comes in? How do we respond to someone who is not a worship arts team minister, who doesn't want to take on the model that Melissa created? And my sense is an interim minister's job is to break down some of the old systems. The unfortunate thing is Anya didn't have a vision for us. Like, she wasn't ready to jump into our system, but she didn't really have a vision to offer. And I worked with Anya to create a vision. Like, I would go to these weekly meetings with Anya, and I would say, Anya, we need a vision. You need a vision. I was kind of slapping Anya around a little bit and said, Anya, you got a vision to sell to this congregation. You've got nothing. And she and I came up with a little mini vision together, and people were the people that we came that presented our vision to were not very open to the vision, and maybe we didn't present it right. But I'm interested in what happens when someone comes in that has a different vision than what we're used to. You know, how do we respond?
Yeah, good question. Thanks, Hal. Why don't we make this the last comment?
I just wanted to lift up and honor people's willingness to speak openly.
Yeah.
You know, I know, Shannon, for you, that was really hard, and you were feeling like you were turning a tide in the way the conversation had been going, and that's a very uncomfortable place to be. And so I just want to really say that I appreciate that. We're going to need more of that, and we're going to need more of trying to disentangle this in a way that we keep a part that we value people's experiences, but then also are able to separate out and talk about process, which is really what you were trying to separate out in that situation. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to say that.
Yeah. And I'd like to just say that for all of you that spoke and continue to speak, thank you. And to honor one another's truths. And if we're able to start with love, no matter which way the truth goes, it's going to go all right. So if we can speak our truth in love, it's just amazing what can happen in community. So I don't know, Andrew, you have anything more that you want to say? Or
I think the most important thing at this point is to thank you, Tom. For this evening and for everyone who's here today. This is what our church needs right now. So thank you for making sure this is a possibility.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. And I'll be back in February for a few days and then again in March. And I'll be working with the targeted ministry team as to how to do it. And if you'd like to find a way for us to connect while I'm here, well, We just made up a big old list, and Mary Beth just filled it in. And I said, whoever says yes, I'm here. So thanks for being so open. Really appreciate it.